This is a Central Line train to North Acton.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Juicebox Music Podcast. I'm Hunter McClamrock, and on the other line, facing the scorn of tomorrow's generation, Nick Moreau.
Dude, so good to be here. So good to be back. I feel like we're back, you know?
I know, it's been a while. I know, right? It feels like a while.
It feels like a while. You know, you've been holding it together with the interviews and stuff, so.
Do what we can here at West Coast headquarters while you're, you know, going all around the world, shady enterprises. Nobody even knows exactly what you're up to.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I am really looking forward to this episode.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. We're going to get straight into some news before we hit it off with the reviews this week. First thing that came to mind, something exciting. For some reason, Kanye West is in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and rumors are swirling of recording sessions for a new album. Spotted in Jackson Hole have been Travis Scott, The Dream, among other performers that might be collaborating on this record with Kanye. What do you think Kanye is doing in Wyoming? What's the inspiration there?
I think he's shredding. I think him and his gang are just hitting the slopes, getting a little skiing.
Now, I mean, I can't really think of a place where they might stand out more than Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Having been there before, it's unbelievably beautiful. It'd be a great place to go and, like, powwow it and record something or work on some kind of project. But if they think they're going to keep it under the radar, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, they're probably recording something.
Well, what was going on with, wasn't his new album supposed to be called TurboGrafx 16 and come out a year and a half ago? We can't really trust any information that comes out of Kanye's camp.
Yeah. Maybe this is it.
Maybe. I mean, anything, the album could come out tomorrow and I wouldn't be surprised.
I would so love that. That would be awesome.
I also think maybe he wants to hang out with Harrison Ford because I know he lives there. So I could see, I could kind of see Harrison Ford collaborating on the album in some way, maybe like a spoken word breakdown or something.
That'd be great. Like maybe just do some lines from Blade Runner.
Yeah. I mean, he needs the work to come to him, right? So
yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. Something high profile. So we'll look forward to that coming out soon. I don't know. That's all we know is that Kanye is in Wyoming. It's just a Kanye alert. In other news, we've been anticipating the return of Arctic Monkeys for a little while. It looks like that is actually happening very soon. They just announced a bunch of American tour dates. The first one being here in Hollywood Forever Cemetery, which is a great place to see a show, even though you're surrounded by dead rock stars. What do you think? There's been no single. There's been no announcement of the album yet. Pretty extensive touring schedule starting in early May. You'd think we'd hear something before then, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's basically in a month and a half, right?
Yeah. Not long. It's just right around the corner.
And no, I totally agree. You'd think you'd hear something, but yeah, the tour is extensive, but man, no Portland dates, no Pacific Northwest so far.
No, it'll definitely happen. There is a little breaking news on this front, though. Through the Instagram news vines, a fan spotted drummer Matt Helders from Arctic Monkeys in a kebab shop somewhere in the UK. And Matt told him that the album would be out in May, which would coincide with all this touring starting. So maybe they're going to pull a Beyonce and release it without any notice.
I'd be really into the album coming out and not having heard a single.
I think they're one of the rare bands that's big enough at this point to do that and have, you know, it generate enough attention and people be excited enough that it would work.
Yeah. No, I think it'd be really cool.
I guess I should say, I say Beyonce, maybe I should say Radiohead. I don't know. Who really invented the surprise album release? Who are we crediting that to?
Oh, I want to say Radiohead, but I'm not sure if I'm right. Yeah, I'd say Radiohead. Let's go with it. It's official.
Okay, that's official. It's Radiohead. Well, so they can pull a Radiohead. We'll see what happens. Hopefully you get to check them out at that show at the Cemetery coming up soon. Yeah. Another artist that's kind of been around for a while and is making a comeback of sorts, similar era, is Julian Casablancas, who's putting out a new album with his band, The Voids, with a Z. I think at very beginning of April, right? He just was interviewed on Vulture.com in an interview that's been getting a lot of attention because he seems a little wacky, I guess, or maybe because not many people give good interviews anymore. But what were you take away from this Julian Casablancas interview, Nick?
I thought it was a great interview. I mean, it was such a great read. And I also think, you know, I don't know if he sounded wacky, but maybe they just caught him at a time where he had a lot on his mind and he just needed to say stuff. And I thought he made some fair points. I think it was refreshing to hear from someone who was kind of has a pretty big public persona and not afraid to speak their mind.
Yeah, he mentioned that basically he thought of the Strokes as kind of the job that he did for money. Well, whereas I think he's more interested artistically and in what he's doing with The Voids, which seems pretty obvious if you've been following his career the last, I don't know, decade or so.
Yeah. Yeah, that part was really interesting. It made me a little sad to think that I don't know when we'll get any Strokes material coming out with Albert Hammond and him kind of touring right now, and they kind of seem to be really into their own thing. So we'll see, I guess.
And one thing that a lot of people picked up on from this interview was where he mentions that Ariel Pink should be bigger than Ed Sheeran.
I totally agree with that.
I mean, not that in a perfect world he should be bigger than Ed Sheeran, but like that he really should be, because you know there's some kind of cultural brainwashing going on to think that for us to think that Ed Sheeran is good popular music.
Yes, yes. No, I agreed with those statements, and maybe my the fact that I despise Ed Sheeran's music is kind of fueling this sentiment, but I totally agree. I think that's just, he was just using an example, but I think you could use several artists to plug into those, right? You could say,
yeah,
this artist should be bigger than that one. But the broader point is really important, and I think is very true. I don't know. I really enjoyed that part of the interview. I think the interviewer, to be honest, I think the interviewer was not totally grasping it at first, and it took a few questions for Julian to just say, like, basically this is what I'm saying. But I thought he did a good job. I was pretty engaged into the interview and read the whole thing, which I'll admit sometimes I don't read the whole interview because they're boring.
Yeah, I didn't realize how kind of politically engaged Julian Casablancas is, that even on the website for his record label, he has a politics section of links, and he also pushed back on the interviewer not perceiving the Strokes as a political band, talking about how the song New York City Cops was on their first record, was on the international release of it, and then it didn't come out on the American release because September 11th basically happened in between those two releases. So he believes the narrative of the Strokes not being a political band is due to those kind of factors, where I guess he's always said put politics into the music. I mean, none of it is that obvious to me.
Yeah, I don't think it's that obvious, but he also referenced, I think, Room on Fire, right? As in a more political album, which, you know, to your point, I never thought of.
Me either. And I mean, Room on Fire, I thought of as as a party album, really.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I wonder if, like, today, Julian Casablancas thinks Room on Fire was a political album, but feels like back in the day when they were in their, like, really hitting the scene pretty hard. If I mean, it feels natural that that would be a party album to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, the lifestyle from him around the time of Room on Fire and now married, children, it's got to be really different.
Yeah, I would agree.
Early 20s versus late 30s, or I don't even know how old he is now.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it is it's a really worthwhile interview to read, if only for the fact that you don't get many interesting interviews with rock artists these days. I don't know if the interviewers aren't willing to ask the questions or if the subjects are just not very interesting usually, but this is a good one. He kind of reminds me of Kyrie Irving a little bit in a way, with where he's coming out with some, you know, he's just talking about questioning things and doing interviews in a way that are, you know, not so ordinary.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is that I think that the Julian Casablancas, from the get-go in an interview, he had something he wanted to talk about. Like, he didn't really care what the interviewer wanted to ask him about the voids. I mean, what did he say? Is like, essentially, I'm disappointed in the internet. It's like his second or third sentence in the interview, and that just goes into just this sidebar conversation that ends up being the whole interview.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that's pretty cool, right? I do see that parallel with Kyrie Irving, but
he did reference LeBron in the interview too, saying that, you know, that he thought that it was his right to speak up and say whatever he wants, just, you know, not shut up and dribble.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Julian was in complete control of that interview and not the interviewer. But it made for a better interview, I would think.
Well, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, they tear it up in the Eastern Conference. But their rival in the Western Conference, Steph Curry with the Golden State Warriors, just had an excellent 30th birthday party. Did you see anything about this, Nick?
Oh, is this the surprise news you were off on me?
So, you know, Steph Curry just turned 30 years old a couple days ago, showed up on a yacht to a surprise birthday party. Turns out there's some entertainment waiting for him at this party. This is where it gets music related. Okay. Bay Area legend E-40, and then headlining the Curry birthday party, none other than Nashville's very own Paramore.
Wow.
They're at the party for Steph Curry. So you got Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, China Clay, and Steph all jamming out to Paramore. Haley Williams singing him happy birthday for his big 3-0. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it, Nick?
Yeah, I didn't even see that. Paramore? Is he a Paramore fan?
I think he's a really big Paramore fan. And who isn't, to be honest?
That's kind of cool.
They're treasures.
Yeah.
I just thought it was sweet. He got serenaded, you know, the whole happy birthday song, everything. They canceled practice the next day.
Oh, man.
Just got too lit.
Big night.
Yeah. So I've been hearing rumblings that Paramore were really big in NBA circles. And now to have it confirmed like this on such a momentous occasion, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I mean, I definitely didn't go to work after my 30th birthday. I don't think he should.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Paramore, they just, somebody flew them out to play this show, I guess. They're an arena headlining band. This is a big get for a birthday party.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like Under Armour or the Warriors or somebody.
Somebody just sponsored them to come out. I mean, yeah. It's a good look for them, don't you think? Like, this is great promotion for the band as well. Got a big tour coming up.
I agree. Yeah,
Paramore,
that's great.
And Curry matching brands. We love it.
I'm going to look this up.
Well, awesome. It's been a little while since we've talked on a regular show like this. What have you been listening to aside from the reviews that we're doing this week?
The only thing I'm listening to is that interview you've had with Lawrence.
Oh
gosh, that was amazing.
That was really fun. He was great.
That was really good. Yeah. So because of that, I've been listening to a lot of Felt. It's been awesome around the house, you know, the interview, I mean, man, it's such a great guy. Yeah. So if anybody hasn't listened to that interview that Hunter had, I think earlier last week, I mean, I highly encourage it. It was great. Great, great, great.
I love Lawrence. Those in Checkout felt too, now that there's finally some on streaming services.
Yeah. I've been listening to an album I'm not going to talk about right now too much. I'm just going to mention it. The album, I would say it is a real surprise album by Nicholas Jaar. He released it under the name Against All Logic. It's got 2012 to 2017. Hopefully we'll do a full review in the coming weeks. So I've been listening to that quite a bit. As I was in Europe, it was pretty constant in my headphones. I didn't mention it last time because I thought maybe we would review it between the last episode and this one. So hopefully we'll do it next time. But I have been listening to also a soundtrack called "You Were" from the movie "You Were Never Really Here," the Johnny Greenwood soundtrack.
Yeah. I haven't heard. I just wanted
to mention it because it's excellent. But also, the first track, "Tree Synthesizers." It's not three as the numbers. "Tree Synthesizers." I almost cried when I first listened to it. It's like so emotional. It's all instrumental, but man, and if you just, it's unbelievable. I've
heard that it's very different from the Phantom Thread soundtrack, right? Like it's, I don't know about what the instrumentation that he's using here is, but that was like big strings and piano and very grandiose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really like it. So I just wanted to mention it. Anybody who likes soundtrack should listen to it. And then just recently, I haven't really listened to it too much, the Teenage Wrist album, Chrome Neon Jesus. I've been listening to a little bit in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I was going to bring that album up. I've been listening to that album a lot. It's great. Yeah. Like they're really holding the flag for like Catherine Wheel, Hum, Failure kind of 90s space rock in a way that I haven't heard, I don't know, since then. And they do it really, really well. So it's kind of an exciting album if you're in the mood for anything like that. They're like a young Los Angeles-based band on Epitaph Records.
Yeah. Yep.
Also been spinning this Young Fathers album, Coco Sugar, a lot. It's really cool. I got into it more than some of their previous stuff that I've listened to. They're a Edinburgh trio. Won the Mercury Music Prize a few years ago for an earlier album. And they kind of fuse some rap and indie rock and kind of trip hop. I mean, the closest comparison I could think of to them would probably be something like Massive Attack, but a little bit less downbeat. There's definitely some real hooks on this album too. It's a little bit feistier and it's really good. I'm going to keep listening to it a lot.
Awesome.
Saw Noel Gallagher live the other night. Noel Gallagher.
Well, how was that? I didn't even ask you. How was that?
Guitar player and songwriter in Oasis, of course. It was fine. I mean,
wow.
I think I really wish I had seen Liam on this tour, like instead of Noel, if I had just gone to one. I've seen Noel before. And, you know, all the songs he plays are pretty good. And it's just, and he honestly, it's better when he's chatting with the crowd, which he didn't do that much of. It was a pretty business-like performance. You know, his new album is getting got a lot more like raves because I think it's a little different. It's a little more psychedelic. And the production by David Holmes is a little bit more interesting, but I just don't think it's that good really. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was all worth it for the Oasis songs that happened towards the end of the set.
What song did he play?
Well, he closed kind of with the encore was like "Go Let It Out" and "Wonder," he's basically covering Ryan Adams' version of "Wonderwall" at this point, kind of folkier version of "Wonderwall" into "Don't Look Back in Anger," and then the band started doing "All We Need Is Love" by the Beatles, and I was out of there. I don't know. I don't have the stomach for it or something. I miss the Edge and of course the guitar player, the Edge from U2. I miss him too, just on a daily basis. I'm thinking about him, but I miss Liam's Edge. I miss the Edge and the snarl and the attitude of Oasis. So, you know, it had its pluses and minuses. The best part is seeing all the drunk British people at these gigs, like singing along to everything. So that makes it worth it too.
I've never seen him live. When the only time I've come close was at Coachella when he played. I'd be interested to see him, but I totally get your sentiment.
Dude, I totally forgot I even saw Noel Gallagher at Coachella. I guess I did though.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you going. Yeah.
That about sums it up. All right, first up, new album from the band Gangar. This is a London-based four-piece with their sophomore album, follow-up to A Dream Outside. The new album is called Where Wildness Grows. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about this album, Nick? Were you a fan of Gangar before you heard this record?
I was, yeah. I really got into them. I think you introduced me to them. This seems to be a current trend on
this. Yeah, and they were, and a friend of mine introduced them to me too. I hadn't really heard of them at all till then.
I think I was introduced to them through the EP. I think, is it She's a Witch or?
Yeah.
Yeah, that EP. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought the EP. I liked it so much. I bought it. I really liked it. And then their album, A Dream Outside, came out a couple of years ago, but I only recently listened to it, I guess maybe a year ago or so. And I think it wasn't released in the US somehow. I was having a hard time finding it. Maybe that's why I didn't listen to it. And then, yeah, I was a fan of their music. And then I was really looking forward to this new release.
Yeah. So their music, I would say, you know, it's guitar, dreamy, swirly, but I mean, I would definitely call it pop before I call it rock almost. I mean, they're like a lot of hooks, vocals in falsetto. It's hard for me to like compare them to a lot of other bands. I keep trying to think of comparisons. There's a few songs, especially on that She's a Witch EP, that remind me of Deer Hunter, but in a very British way. And there's a song on the new record called Carrion, which is the name of a Deer Hunter track and is the most Deer Hunter sounding song, I think, on the whole album.
Which, my favorite song on the album.
Which I think I tried to get another friend of mine into this band, and I told him the Deer Hunter thing, and then he saw they had a song with the same title, and he was just like, no, I can't do this. They're like a tribute band. But yeah. They're not really. I mean, they don't really sound that much like Deer Hunter. Here and there they do. I would say, you know, this album compared to A Dream Outside is really focused, and it's really like the songs are really well formed and like poppy. I mean, I'd say all of these songs have like really big hooks to them. Whereas sometimes in the first record, the hooks were kind of a little bit harder to catch, a little bit more like a Pokemon that are, you know, difficult to catch.
I see what you got here.
Gangar gets their name from a Pokemon character that I guess I've seen before. I don't know. He's gray. He's like little. I don't know how to describe these guys. That kind of sounds like the members of the band. They kind of look little and gray and wily and hard to catch. Do you like this album? What do you think?
I've listened to this album probably the most I've listened to before reviewing any album this year. What I mean by that is like I listened to it a lot before this, like us recording, compared mm-hmm. to some of the other albums we've reviewed that I've listened to less, but I had more of a grasp on it. I don't really have a grasp on this album. I catch myself kind of having to listen, like forcing myself to listen to it. Like if I don't pay attention, three songs go by and I haven't. So when I do listen to it, I like it. What I did is I listened to A Dream Outside after it, the last listen I did, just back to back, and I think I like A Dream Outside better. I think I like just exactly what you're saying, kind of the more, it feels less calculated. I think the beginning of A Dream Outside is better than the beginning of Where Wildness Grows, and that's kind of where it loses me sometimes. I will say, though, that Where Wildness Grows has some really high points. I think that it might be better served as an EP. And I think there's five great songs that could be a really good EP. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I can name them because I wrote them down. Before Sunrise, Where Wildness Grows, Carrion, Pull Over Now, and Rising Tides. I think if you did, that would be a great five-song EP to me. But apart from that, I do admire the songwriting. I think they've definitely, like, I can see, like, the polish and everything they're doing now. But it's also kind of what turns me off is I kind of have a feeling they're going for this poppy thing, and their aspirations are maybe a little too big for me right now. Sunrise, if we just do what we can. Do you feel that at all when you listen to it? Like, I could see them, like, on the next album cycle playing some fairly big venues.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand what you're saying about not having much of a grasp on it. I've listened to this album nonstop for several days now. I mean, I've probably heard it 10 or 12 times. And it's hard for me to decide how I feel about it. I didn't get into it at first at all. And kind of the initial songs I heard, and I was ready to write them off a little bit because I think part of it is they, as a band, don't have that much personality to me. And I really like A Dream Outside, and it sounds great. And their songs are good, and the hooks are really good. But lyrically, there's not that much for me to, like, get connected with, at least yet.
Yeah.
But as I listen to this one more and more, I really enjoy listening to it because I really like every song on it on a purely melodic level.
Okay. Okay.
I find it really enjoyable. I mean, I really like the second half of the album. And I think there is a direction there for them to go. There's a little bit more edge to it that I think, you know, starting with probably I think it's the fifth song, Blind Truth, fifth or sixth song.
Yeah.
Everything after that, I really like a lot. And
yeah, I think I would agree the second half is better. I mean, I would say from Carrion forward, but Blind Truth probably as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And all the songs that they were putting out, prior to the album coming out, besides Carrion, we're all in the first half. Mm. And I think that's kind of it's playing it very safe. I think this band could evolve in a way that is more interesting than I would have thought, and maybe getting some more attention and a bigger fan base based on this could be a good thing for them. It's funny because this is the second, they recorded this album twice. They scrapped it the first time.
Oh.
And apparently they took a long time to record it and were tracking instruments separately and not really playing together. And then they ended up scrapping it and doing the whole thing in a couple weeks, mostly recorded live. So it would be interesting to hear what the other version of it sounds like, but I'm sure this is probably the right choice. I mean,
right.
It seemed pretty obvious to them in interviews about it. But I've gone back and forth a lot with this, and I think I'm coming down on the side of of liking it quite a bit, and I think I'm going to keep listening to it. But I it was hard for me to articulate my feelings on it. Like you're saying, it's hard for me to grasp it. I keep thinking about the Pokemon. Because they're so hard to catch, apparently.
No, I totally agree. And then when if I put it in context with the other albums we've reviewed this year, I think if it was a year where we were thirsty for really good music, mm-hmm. I'd probably spend more time with it. But we've had so much good stuff.
There's a lot coming out. Yeah.
I mean, yesterday I was putting music on it in the house, and instead of putting this on, I put Hookworms on. Right. So I think, you know, it's in a way too bad that it's coming out in a year where we're getting some really great music for them. But at the same time, when I look at everything we've reviewed, there's definitely like three or four albums that are, or five that are, to me, way above this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to make me want to keep listening to it, except for some of these songs, like the songs I mentioned, I actually really like.
Yeah, I think the songs are the only reason to come back to it, because I think there's so many things, especially on the surface with this band, that make them seem really generic, kind mm-hmm. of. You know, like their name, the artwork, their photos, like it's not like a band like Shame that you have, you know, seems so interesting or like, or Hookworms, who have a sound that doesn't really sound like anybody right now. Or, you know, this Gengar just has some really good songs. They play them well. I mean, I don't know what else. It's going to be hard for people to pay attention, especially in the States, unless they make themselves stand out somehow. And I think maybe over time the songs will bring people, you know, back, but we'll see.
I think that's the biggest, what you said is the biggest thing to me, is that it has a, it's, you know, in a way it's like, it's really well done. The songwriting is good. They're really good. They play their instruments really well. I mean, it's apparent when you listen to it, but it still doesn't stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about if I were to go see them live, the way I felt after watching Shame live would not happen after watching them live. That's my gut feeling right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that that's true. They occupy a different space, but it is like, you know, I have found it good for like cleaning around the house.
Yeah.
It's super pleasant. And
it's very pleasant.
And there is a little bit of, like I was saying before, I detect a little more of an edge in the second half of the record that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could go places from there. I haven't listened to A Dream Outside since I got this album. So I need to go back and compare it to that.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed doing back to back because it was different, and I like A Dream Outside a little better because, I don't know, maybe that's when I fell in love with the band a little more, you know? But I have to say, I was really, really looking forward to this album. Maybe I'm a little harsh on it, but I guess my expectations were pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, it's not bad. And those five songs are definitely make it definitely a definite must listen. if you have a streaming service, I'd encourage anybody to listen to them. And I think, you know, they might be coming back with something closer to the second half of the album, which I agree with you, sounds way more promising.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, a little mixed on Where Wildness Grows by Ganger, but I think we both recommend it in some ways. Next this week, we did the interview with Lawrence from Felt and Go-Kart and Mozart, and we felt like we should spend a little bit of time talking it more in depth about his new record, Mozart's Mini Mart. I thought this would be pretty interesting because I have been following him for quite a while, but I think you were going in not really having listened to Go-Kart Mozart before, right, Nick?
Oh, I was going in blind.
Which, I mean, I think you go a lot of ways with this music, especially, you know, in its current incarnation. So Go-Kart Mozart is the latest project from Lawrence, but it's lasted longer than maybe his more famous projects like Felt in the 80s and Denim in the 90s. He's a very idiosyncratic British musician. Nowadays, Go-Kart Mozart is mostly like synthesizer, drum machine based, not a lot of guitars going on. There is definitely an element of like camp and fun and humor to it, but it's got a lot lurking under the surface, I would say. So what was your initial impression of this record?
To me, I was so surprised when I first started listening to it. I mean, I can't describe how surprised I was.
What did you think it was going to be like?
I didn't know what to think because of the art, the cover of the album, the art.
Okay.
I didn't know what to think. And then I listened to it and I fell in love with it. Like,
nice.
I really like that we are reviewing this with Ganger, because to me, the biggest difference when I think about these two albums, like, first of all, they sound completely different, right? I'm not going there. But Go-Kart Mozart's Mini Mart sounds pure. Like, it feels like it's coming from a pure place. Like, Lawrence doesn't seem to give a fuck what people think. And he's just doing what he wants to do. I mean, he talks about it in the interview. Again, I'd encourage anybody to go listen to it. This album is 17 tracks for 35 minutes.
Yes. Sorry, that's something 17 I love tracks,
and it's only 35 minutes. And and the songs, like, are awesome. Like, some of them, like, are really, really good. And the rest, like, as a whole, it's such a fun listen. It's super fun. It's deep. Some of the song titles I'm still like trying to wrap my head around, but this is what Lawrence wanted to do, and he did it. And I am really, really into it. And yeah, thank you, Hunter.
Yeah, I think it's his best album as Go-Kart Mozart. Maybe the last one came out about 7 or 8 years ago now, and it's called On the Hot Dog Streets. It's similarly like a ton of songs, mostly short. I went back and listened to it recently, and it really, really holds up. Lawrence's, his whole concept for this is it's a version of novelty rock. So that's what he calls it. So it's like meant to be like funny and fun. And I found, you know, this album is quite sad.
I agree.
And, you know, lyrically, with some of the songs being like wacky and funny and silly, but there's a lot of sadness about it. And some of the songs are, you know, really just really catchy, really well written. I don't know. I think this is a good place to start if you're trying to get interested in Go-Kart Mozart, but maybe if you've never heard any of his music before, Felt might be a better jumping off point.
I'm living in relative poverty. I'm living tenner a day. A tenner a day. Take a look at shop doorways, curled up on the floor. You'll see me with no future.
It's a little more conventional, I guess. Sometimes people hear this for the first time and they just think it's Weird Al Yankovic and they want to turn it off.
Yeah, I could see that, but I mean, I haven't listened to the other Go-Kart Mozart albums, so I can't tell you if it's a good starting point. But I will say, though, if you've listened to Felt, it's not a lot like Felt.
No. Yeah, he has done nothing but evolve over the course of his... he's been in music business for 40 years or close to it.
Yeah.
So it's always it's a treat to get this album. It seems like... you know, he's going to be playing live shows from talking to him in the interview and seeing other interviews with him in the media that, you know, along with the Felt reissues, that this record's gotten a pretty good amount of attention and people are really liking it. I know I do.
Yeah. I agree. I'd be down to see him live. I mean, that'd be so fun.
It'd be so fun. Yeah. I mean, he would be great. It made me think of, you know, thinking about this album and thinking about him and talking to him, and then that Julian Casablancas interview that we were talking about before, where he mentioned that Ariel Pink should be bigger than Ed Sheeran. I mean, I think you could definitely put Lawrence in there, that Felt or Go-Kart Mozart should be bigger than, I don't know, Imagine Dragons.
Anybody like Ed Sheeran?
Let's just pick on Ed Sheeran some more.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is popular. It's pop music, but it's from such a distinct perspective that I think people, you know, it doesn't have enough platitudes and generalities to maybe appeal to the masses.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. But, you know, I would encourage anybody to go listen to it. Really, really. It's worth a listen.
Yeah, I mean,
I really like it. I understand if people think at first listen are like, what am I listening to? But
there's a song on the album called Crocodile Rock Stars with a Z.
Yeah. Yeah, and the crocodile with the A. Yeah. And then the next one's called Knickers on the Line by Three Chord Fraud.
Yep.
There's a song called, the first song is called Anagram of We Sold Apes.
Yeah, what do you think is an anagram of We Sold Apes?
I don't know.
I was trying to figure that out.
I like the song, I think it's number six, it's called Nubbin in a Coke Can.
Nubbin in a Coke Can, yeah, that's a really good one.
And then number 16 is called A Ding 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 Dong. Chromium Plated, We're So Related. I mean, we're just, all the song titles are great. There's one called I'm Dope, which is great.
There is a song called I'm Dope. that one has some moments in it. I really like this record. I was so happy to talk to him because I had been listening to it a lot and just... I mean, really getting into the lyrics on this album, I was talking about Gengar, where there's not something lyrically that draws me in, but like there's the lead single off this album is called When You're Depressed, which is a song about being depressed. That sounds really happy. About staying in bed, not being able to do anything. There's a song called Relative Poverty, where the chorus is, I'm living in relative poverty. I live on a tenner a day, meaning 10 pounds a day.
Yeah.
Which could be autobiographical. I don't know Lawrence well enough to know his financial situation, but it definitely sounds real to me and is super unusual in pop music.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. I think he goes for it, and I wouldn't expect anything less from him after listening to the interview. Do you believe my eyes are telling me lies? I saw a ship ashore with baked apple pie, hiding in corners and climbing up trees. Love is a big ship, but following me. Big ship, following me. Love is a big ship, but following me.
He says he, I mean, originally Go-Kart Mozart was meant to be the four albums and then over. And now he's been releasing music as Go-Kart Mozart for close to like 20 years. Mm-hmm. He says he's got one more EP coming out, and then he's changing the name and moving on to his next project. So yeah, we will see. I think it's called Mozart's Estate is going to be his new name.
Nice.
But yeah, check him out. Support Lawrence. Definitely check out the band Felt. I think, you know, Felt and Gengar have some sounds in common, I would say. But, you know, this is a complete kind of 180 from that sound. But if you just like good pop music, you'll enjoy anything that he does. And also check out that interview, because we were really excited about it.
Yeah, check out the interview. It's really good. And Lawrence was kind enough to go long, which was like without us asking. And listen to it until the end, because it's worth it.
Yeah. I feel like we could have talked forever, and I would like to talk to him again sometime too. So maybe we can bring him on. He said the EP is coming out later this year, so that might be a good time.
There we go.
But that's all we got this week. What are you looking forward to next week? Anything that you can think of off the bat?
Not right now. I think, maybe the Against All Logic album that we'll review, but I've already listened to that. I'm not quite sure what's releasing later this week, or I guess we could check.
It's hard to keep up with it all. There's really good albums that have come out this year that we haven't had a chance to talk about at all either. So it's kind of overwhelming, but we'll figure it out.
Yep. And then don't forget to follow us on Facebook. Juicebox a Music Podcast is the name of the page.
Hunter, your friends.
Yeah, please. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes and all the various streaming services where you get your podcasts from. Hunter, where can people find you, maybe on Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me at McClamrock, McClamrock. Let us know if there are albums coming out that you really want us to review too.
Yeah. And you can find me at Nick Moreau, NICMOREAU. And then in the next coming weeks, we hope to have a separate Twitter account, a separate Instagram page, and a separate YouTube page. A lot of work here. looking forward to doing
and
that.
And an intern. Everyone.
And yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, good talking to you, Nick. We'll see you soon.
All right. See you, man.
Bye.
Bye.